Good morning and welcome to Catholic Views. I'm Jerry Klein. Thanks for joining us today on the program. Kind of a special treat and a sad one at the same time. Gene Young, who is, of course, does news for this program and is managing editor of the Bishop's Bulletin, is retiring soon. So we're going to have a nice conversation with Gene. Hope you'll stick around for that. He'll have news for us in just a bit. First, the readings for this Sunday. Brianna Wingen with the first and second reading. Deacon Bill Radio with the gospel.
A reading from the Acts of the Apostles. After Paul and Barnabas had proclaimed the good news to that city and made a considerable number of disciples, they returned to Lystra and to Iconium and to Antioch. They strengthened the spirit of the disciples and exhorted them to persevere in the faith, saying, "It is necessary for us to undergo many hardships to enter the kingdom of God." They appointed elders for them in each church, and with prayer and fasting commended them to the Lord, in whom they had put their faith. They had traveled through Pisidia and reached Pamphylia. After proclaiming the word at Perga, they went down to Attalia. From there they sailed to Antioch, where they had been commended to the grace of God for the work they had now accomplished. And when they arrived, they called the church together and reported what God had done with them and how he had opened the door of faith to the Gentiles. The word of the Lord. A reading from the book of Revelation. Then I, John, saw a new heaven and a new earth. The former heaven and the former earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. I also saw the holy city, a new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Behold, God's dwelling is within the human race. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people. And God himself will always be with them as their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes, and there shall be no more death or mourning, wailing or pain. For the old order has passed away." The one who sat on the throne said, "Behold, I make all things new." The word of the Lord.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. When Judas had left them, Jesus said, "Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself, and God will glorify him at once. My children, I will be with you only a little while longer. I give you a new commandment: love one another as I have loved you, so you also should love one another. This is how all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." The Gospel of the Lord.
And now with a look at news highlights from this past week from the Bishop's Bulletin, here's Gene Young.
Thanks, Jerry. In the news this morning, a seminarian for the Diocese of Sioux Falls, Timothy Cohn, will be ordained, God willing, to the priesthood on Friday, May 31st at 11 a.m. at the Cathedral of St. Joseph in Sioux Falls. Reverend Mr. Cohn was born on June 1st, 1987 in Fayetteville, North Carolina, to Thomas and Susan Cohn. He received his Bachelor of Music in Music Education from the University of South Dakota in Vermilion. In 2013, Timothy became a seminarian for the Diocese of Sioux Falls. He began his seminary studies at St. Paul's Seminary School of Divinity in St. Paul, Minnesota, and will complete them, those studies, that is, this month. And additionally, two seminarians for the Diocese of Sioux Falls will be ordained also, God willing, to the diaconate, one on May 30th at the Cathedral of St. Joseph, and a second at St. Peter's Basilica in Rome in October. Michael Kapperman will be ordained a transitional deacon on May 30th at the Cathedral of St. Joseph. Kapperman was born July 23rd, 1992 in Sioux Falls to Dennis and Carol Kapperman. He has three brothers, two older and one younger. St. George Parish in Hartford has always been his home parish. Anthony Klein will be ordained a transitional deacon on October 3rd at St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. Klein was born June 24, 1993, in Sioux Falls to Steve and Bridget Klein. He's the youngest in his family and has two older sisters. St. Lambert Parish in Sioux Falls has always been his home parish. You can read and see more about the ordinations in the May edition of the Bishop's Bulletin in homes across the diocese right now and online at www.sfcatholic.org. Although the Supreme Court justices chose not to take up two petitions for review submitted by death row inmates from Alabama and Tennessee this week, they didn't do so with a simple one-sentence rejection. Instead, they made their reasonings and their divided views on capital punishment clear with new opinions that set the record straight, in the words of one of the opinions, offering reasons behind their recent death penalty decisions. The flurry of opinions issued this week, more than 30 pages in all, reviews the high court's responses to recent death penalty cases, that is, that appear contradictory. In March, the court blocked the execution of Texas death row inmate Patrick Murphy because his Buddhist religious advisor wasn't permitted to be present. But in February, the court allowed the execution of Dominique Ray, an Alabama Muslim, to proceed, even though Ray had appealed the state's decision to deny an imam's presence at his execution. This week, the court denied a review of an appeal from Christopher Lee Price in Alabama, a death row inmate who had been denied a last-minute stay of execution in April over his challenge to the state's legal injection procedure. New York Cardinal Timothy M. Dolan offered a heartfelt homily on Staten Island on Mother's Day in memory of the victims of the Easter terrorist bombings in Sri Lanka that left more than 250 dead and hundreds wounded. "I offer our beloved Sri Lankan community my sympathy and assurance of my prayers. This has been a terrible time for you after the terrible bombings," the cardinal said. "We love you all very much, and we cherish you here in the Archdiocese of New York. We're happy that you're with us, but I know part of your heart is still back home in Sri Lanka." The cardinal was the principal celebrant, that is, of the Mass at St. Adalbert Church in Staten Island. The 420 people attending included two families who lost loved ones in April's church and hotel bombings in Sri Lanka. "It was my sister-in-law's daughter and three babies and my sister-in-law's son and two babies," said Mary Cicely Perrys, a parishioner of St. Adalbert, St. Roch, in a brief interview after Mass, during which she became too emotional to continue. The youth, affectionately called babies by Perrys, range from ages 6 to 18, that is. The seven victims died while attending Mass at St. Sebastian's Church in Negombo in Sri Lanka. With a look at the news from this past week, I'm Gene Young reporting from the Bishop's Bulletin Newsroom.
It's a horrible situation there, Gene, and there have been a couple others around the world as well recently. It's frightening times to be
always
a Christian.
Time to pray, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, thanks for the news. Hey, let's move on to an interview with you.
Wow.
This morning on Catholic Views, we are joined by none other than the exiting managing editor for the Bishop's Bulletin, Gene Young. Man, Gene, we've been talking about this for a long time.
That's true.
When the reality finally hits, it's like, that's kind of a big deal.
Well, for some people out in the audience, they have already heard it or read about it or been told about it. But for others, this will be breaking news.
So after 19 years.
Yep, 19 and a half.
19
at
and
the
a half
end of
years,
this month.
Gene has reached the point of retirement. I know how excited you and Sarah are for this. Me a bit less so, of course. I mean, I feel really good for you and your wife, but you know, it's a hard thing to make a change like this.
It is, but we've had time because my wife retired several years ago, 3 years ago, and throughout that time, wherever I'd go, whatever I'd do, people would say, "When are you going to join her?" And she would say that, and it became partly a math equation because in this day and time, everything is related to math and numbers. But we got to that point where we said, we realized or reminded ourselves that none of us are promised tomorrow, so we needed to get busy getting on the same page in terms of what we want to do, how we want to do it, and
yep.
We got there. It was easy, and it was fine, and it was a blessing in and of itself. It was. I don't want to mislead people and suggest it was heavy lifting, but there was a lot of math involved, and we got to where we were and where we wanted to be, and so now it's happening.
You know, there's a certain richness, I think, about the fact that you have been here for 19 and a half years. Yeah. And people that don't know your kind of your story before that, you had been a bit of a wandering, you know, the nature of the career that you were in made you sort of a wandering fellow, you and Sarah both, for that matter. So the fact that you had this 19 and a half years in one spot, I think it even surprises you.
It does. And we reflected on that numerous times over the years because I've often told people that in my previous life, I was in what I termed secular media.
Mm-hmm.
And This is always a story that I've told to people repeatedly over the years in different places. But when I first interviewed with then Bishop Carlson for the job, he asked the question that was quintessentially where I was and where I was going. And that was, I was in a career field, and he put it, you're in a career field where there are multiple acute deadlines and you're in the center of everything mm-hmm. every day, or at least perceptionally. And now you're going to come over to, if I got the offer, I was going to come over to a monthly diocesan publication. And I told him with all sincerity and candor, I said, Bishop, when I got out of school, I didn't know what I was going to be doing at 65, and I'm not there yet. But I didn't know what I was going to be doing at 65, but I knew it wasn't radio or television, because that business has always changed, and it's always for really younger people. And so it was an easy move at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people over the years have told me, they say, or I've read, some people say, you know, God's an absentee landlord. He's not really involved. And I'm like, I don't know where you people are looking, because again, there have been, not every minute of the day, but there have been places in my life that I've seen other people encounter God's hand and things.
Yep.
And there have been those cases for me and my wife, and that was one of them, because it was, you know, when I first inquired about the managing editor position, Daryl Thuringer at the time was actually surprised. He's like, are you really interested? And I'm like, yeah, for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. And one of them was, in my mind, you know, God was telling me, you should look around for different alternatives. Yeah. And this was a great one.
And isn't it interesting, and I think you've experienced this in your time here, I certainly have, what a blessing it is to be able to bring together your faith and the work that you're doing, and to be able to express your faith in so many different ways in the product.
That is a great description, because it is. I was born and raised Catholic and Catholic educated all the way through my life, and part of that was my parents' choice. Part of it, as I got older, I had a little bit more input into what Catholic school I went to for high school, and then I had even more input into the university that I went to, Marquette University, Jesuit school. That sometimes got me in trouble here, because they're like, watch out for him. He's Jesuit educated. But the Jesuits
really
were really good on a lot of different reasons. I still quote to people many things they taught me about life and about my faith and about being involved with God and in prayer. But back to your point, it was a great, great opportunity, and it hasn't ever really diminished in that context. You know, I get to do a lot of ministry things, not only in the context of the job, but ancillarily, either with my parish or with the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a blessing. And I actually told that to people when I started to advise people that I was retiring. I said, my time here has been a blessing, and it has every day.
Yeah. Say a little bit more, if you would, about the work that you were doing before, will, because I think that fascinates people too.
Sure.
When I mentioned that you moved a lot, it's because you were in a business that kind of required that.
You did. If you were going to try and get ahead,
TV news,
you had
by
to
the
be,
way.
Yeah, you had to be open to going where the jobs were, where the better jobs were. Again, not every move was a perfect move. My wife, Sarah, and I looked back on that and said, ooh, if we could go back and do something different, we wouldn't have taken that one. But again, to get ahead, you had to move around. And I think back to a class that I had at Marquette, and it was my senior year. And the instructor said, oh, where do you see yourselves in 6 months, to all of us in the class?
Yep.
And some people said, ooh, doing the news in Milwaukee or doing the news in Chicago. And I didn't say that. I said, I'm going to go where the work is, where the work takes me. Because if you narrowed yourself at the beginning when you were getting ready to go from the university level to real life as an adult,
mm-hmm.
and you said, ooh, I'm going to be doing this in 6 months, then you were setting yourself up for failure. Many of my classmates, initially anyway, they did get to work in the cities they wanted to. But one was selling clothes, another one was selling videotape when they had said in class they expected to be doing the news or reporting the news or shooting pictures, you know, being a photographer in the news. They ended up in the cities they wanted to be in, but not in the field they chose. Now, for me, I went, you know, far and wide.
You did. I mean, you covered a lot of the country.
I did. I often over the years told people that it wasn't literally this way, but it was close, that I went coast to coast and border to border.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty close to true. I worked in California. I worked in upstate New York. I worked as far south as Huntsville, Alabama, and Tulsa, Oklahoma. And then I've worked as far north as here. And in a real small place, Ogdensburg, New York, which I think is further north than here. But in every place, my wife and I learned stuff. We got involved with our parish and with our diocese where we were living. Because again, our faith has always been really important to us, an integral part, because God got us to these places. He made sure that we were safe because we were never really in bad shape in any one of those places that we lived and worked in. And my wife was always able to get work because of her background, but we were very fortunate. And again, if you're not open to that stuff, you know, that moving, that growing, that, leapfrogging, so to speak, to better jobs, then you're not going to grow as a person. You're not going to grow as a Christian. You're not going to grow as a human being to learn stuff, to experience stuff. And again, I've told this to people over and over again over the years. No place we worked, even though some positions were not as good as others, mm-hmm. not as spot on moves as others, there was no place that was absolutely void of value. Every place we lived, we learned and grew. We encountered people and things that we had never encountered before, that we have not really encountered since, and because there are things and people that are unique to those places. But it was, I wouldn't change it really very much if I had to go back and do it again.
Let's talk, the capper on that I'll say is that I'm glad that it led you to Sioux Falls, because that's what led you to the diocese and to the Bishop's Bulletin job. Let's talk a little bit about your years working on the Bishop's Bulletin. And I know you did some edition, and this June edition, which is the last one coming up that you're working on, is number what?
I think 234. It's pretty close. It might be off one or two, but that's pretty close.
Yeah.
And it's because this will be 19 and a half years. If I had stayed till the end of December and the 20th year, that would have been the next six, which would have been 20 years times 12 is 240. So I'm pretty confident that the June edition, which I'm working on now, is going to be the 234th one that I got to build and construct and work with.
Can you pick a favorite?
No. But see, that's kind of funny, though, that you mentioned that, because, again, each month they're different. They're obviously, and I've told this to people over the years, there are some pieces, the mechanics of it are similar, the programs that you use, the way you approach constructing it. But every edition is unique. You know, I'll either move ads around or the subject matter will be different. And each time it was a starting place where you were like, one of my favorite comments about things like this is my first pastor when I moved to Sioux Falls was Monsignor James Doyle. And Monsignor Doyle, you know, he'd hold up a blank piece of paper sometimes and say, I see a page filled with possibilities. And that was literally what it was every month, even though you start out with a computer screen as opposed to really hard copy. But every page was blank, and you started from a starting point and built from there.
And never a real shortage of things to talk about.
That was a great point, too. That is a great point, too, because, again, in the course of my time here, in the beginning, I'd hear from a lot of people in different parts of the diocese that, you know, that's a Sioux Falls paper or a Sioux Falls publication. And I'd say, no, it's not. It's a diocesan publication. And you can help make it that way by contributing. And we got to a point where there's all kinds of curves in life. And we got to a point where we were getting so much material every month that there was always things that had a longer shelf life that we'd have to shuffle to the next edition. Sometimes stuff wouldn't get used because we had so much. But that was the message we were selling and sharing at that point, was that it's everybody's publication, so you should contribute. And that's a nice problem to have. I think I told somebody one time that there are only in the course of my time here, there were only two editions or two issues that I actually struggled to fill, and they happen to each be in the summer one year because summertime things do slow down.
Sure.
You know, there isn't school in session, and, you know, parishes, you know, more in the spring or in the fall gearing up for different events that they have. But that was only twice out of 234 issues that, and I don't want to say we were stretching, but that was, for lack of a better phrase, a little bit harder lift to try and make sure that what was on each page was valuable and helped contribute to the overall goal that we were after.
Yeah, always trying to, as you said, kind of balance all the things that need to be talked about, and that's the beauty of the faith too, isn't it? Is that, again, that's an endless an endless list of things
exactly.
to talk about.
If there's anything, you know, this was sometimes a difficult conversation because for everybody who contributed, they took the time to either take a picture or to cobble something together that they wanted to share with other people. And if it didn't make it, they're like, oh, my view of it's not as important as I thought it was.
Right.
And I never like to have that conversation. I try to evolve that conversation over the years in terms of, oh, I want you to keep contributing, but I cannot guarantee it's going to be on this page or this page or this page. I can't guarantee it might not even make it into print
yep.
because we're always up against space constraints.
I think one of the things that we've always struggled with, and we've talked about this, Gene, an awful lot, is and again, probably a real switch from the work that you used to do when there was a daily deadline. Working in a monthly publication is an odd kind of a creature because you can't really be a newsy sort of publication because you know the timeliness just isn't there. And yet, there's a certain amount of things that we know that people aren't going to see unless they see it in the Bishop's Bulletin.
There's two or three things about that. That is accurate to a point. When I first started here, that's one of the things that once the deadline came, that was, in my mind, some of the most dangerous time because there was still 10 days to 2 weeks
yeah.
by the time we had proof day for the next edition before it showed up in people's mailboxes. And I was like, oh, I don't want something to become so outdated that people look at it and say, well, this is old. I'm not going to read this and then toss it.
Yeah.
I did do some feedback. You know, it was more episodic and anecdotal feedback as opposed to scientific in terms of asking people how they read the Bishop's Bulletin, what they got out of it, how they looked at it. But the other couple of points were that as time went on, that was the thing is I learned from talking to people that for some people, this is the only stream of information they get because
right.
over the years, what I termed earlier secular media has been on a downhill slide, which we could go on and on about that, but I won't. But I'd say that for a lot of people, they gave up on secular media a long time ago. And as a result, they look to their church, their diocese, to give them information that's not skewed, that's not, you know, that's accurate, that's comprehensive, that has a feel-good approach to it. You know, and that was another good point about it is that I had learned that over the years that regardless of the hard target timeline of between proof day and then publication and getting to the mailboxes, there was always a couple of weeks that I'm like, ooh, please don't let this change that much.
Yeah, a great example, right, is well, we experienced it when Bishop Carlson left, Bishop Swain arrived. Now we're kind of anticipating, you know, the retirement of Bishop Swain, and we don't know exactly when a new bishop's going to be appointed. And I'm with you, you know, that's kind of that monthly tension of, oh, or how are we going to cover that in the bulletin as best we can?
Exactly. But because of the point that we made, that for a lot of people, this is their principal source of information,
yeah.
you know, that there is a certain amount of understanding and forgiveness on their part that they're like, well, this is what I want, and this is what I choose to get. So I'm gonna forgo that stuff that it's not instantaneously in my mailbox.
You also lived through the change from going from newsprint, more of kind of a newspaper format, to the magazine format. We had our challenges with that to try to, you know, I guess bring people along and get ourselves into that mode of operating. But I think in the long run, I think that probably was a good move.
Yeah, I think it was. I think it you know, I've gotten a lot of positive comments because now it's all color, as opposed when yeah. we were in newsprint, there were like 8 of the 24 pages when we were able to do 24 pages in newsprint that were color. Now it's all color, and people do give you feedback on that. They mm-hmm. said, oh, that looked really good. They also have made the point over the years that as they get their Bishop's Bulletin in the mailbox, because it's now all color, they will look at it more succinctly, or not succinctly, that's not a good word, but more in depth right away than they used to, because some people would give me feedback that they would look at it, set it aside, just scan it, set it aside, and then go back to it. Now, because it's all color, they'll look and they'll see, mm-hmm. you know, more in-depth time invested in looking at it when it first arrived. And that's, as I said, episodic feedback, but it's feedback.
favorite memories, favorite things that you've experienced in your time as a bulletin editor?
Sure. That's one of the things that is it took me to, well, it put me in contact with so many people. Because that's the thing is I often joked over the years, because I'm a big baseball fan, that you can't tell your players without a scorecard. So I was always looking and learning about the far quarters of the diocese and the fact that, again, the bishop's bulletin and the bishop touch all of those places every month, maybe not in person every month, but the paper, the publication gets there, and that does touch them. Yep. But then when Bishop's out on the road, whether it's for confirmation or just a periodic visit to a school or to a parish, you know, that's their touch. So even though we have a huge, relatively speaking, amount of area in our diocese, all of East River, it is something that I was able to cobbled together a lot of different contacts from one end of the diocese to the other. And that's probably one of my biggest accomplishments and also one of my best memories.
And probably one of the things you will miss.
Exactly. That's true. Because when you're working out in your front yard, sometimes people will honk, but they won't necessarily pull up into your driveway. So that's, and I'm not going to be cold calling people and saying, hey, what's going on? I could do that.
I'm sure
my wife's got the honey-do list long and ready to go.
Well, that's what I wanted to go next. You know, people always say, well, when you're retiring, gosh, what in the world are you going to do with all your time? I know you and Sarah have been, as you said at the very beginning, you've been talking about this for a while. You're kind of ready.
Yeah, it's been, one thing I'd say is that a blessing was that throughout the process, because it didn't just happen overnight. It wasn't just a light switch flip. You know, you and other people here were saying, "Ooh, you're not under any pressure. Just do what you have to." And that was really helpful and prudent because, again, there is a lot of information that comes your way. Mm-hmm. And again, I mentioned earlier, I'm not 65 yet. I'm not going to be for a while. And so as a result, that was part of the equation. I had to cobble together how I was going to get from here today to Medicare age.
Sure.
And that's principally the math. But my wife and I have been pretty prudent over the years, and we've socked away a lot of money. Not a lot of money, but we think it's a lot. We hope it's enough.
Yeah.
But her big thing has been just that none of us are promised tomorrow. And so we want to get together and do things that are going to please us, that help us. Still, we're going to be involved in different ministries as we are now, because that's important to us. And again, everything, we say this often to ourselves and to others, everything we have is a gift from God. So we know that, we recognize it. So it's always about giving back and trying to pay back while we're doing it day to day.
Well, it's been a great run.
It has.
Really grateful for all that you've done for the diocese, for the Bishop's Bulletin. For me personally, I would say that as well. Wish you nothing but the absolute best.
Well, we'll be praying about that. That's for sure.
All right. God bless. Well, thanks. My thanks to Gene for spending some time talking to us. It's great to reminisce about some of the years, some of the experiences that he'd had in his career. And of course, we are greatly going to miss him on this program, as well as editor of the Bishop's Bulletin as well. Quick mention, we have ordinations coming up at the end of the month, 11 o'clock on Thursday and Friday, the 30th and 31st. And great opportunities to participate in our local church. That's our time for Catholic Views this morning. We'll be back next Sunday.